Blog Talk Radio.
Now, in its second edition, Carol Dean's popular book, The Art of Film Funding, has 12 new chapters to cover all areas of film financing and how to avoid expensive pitfalls. Learn how to start with an idea and end with a trailer. How to make an ask for money. Create your story structure and your trailer. Legal advice, fair use, successful crowdfunding, how to ask for music rights, and what insurance you can't shoot without. Available on Amazon under Carol Dean and at FromTheHeartProductions.com. Hi, and welcome to The Art of Film Funding. I'm your co-host, Claire Papin, along with Carol Dean, author of the best-selling book, The Art of Film Funding. Carol is also the founder and president of From the Heart Productions and the host of this show. Our guest today is Tom Malloy, author of Bankroll 2, A New Approach to Financing Feature Films, and of the 6-CD audio course on how to finance your film. Both can be found at bankrollthebook.com. Tom is a writer who belongs to the Writers Guild. He's also produced 5 features, 3 documentaries, a TV pilot, and a TV show. And Carol, I understand that you and Tom are friends.
Oh, yes, Claire. I produce several events for Tom to teach filmmakers how to raise money. He's great. Thank you, Tom, for joining us.
Oh, yes, thank you. Gosh, Carol, we've been friends for, what, 4 or 5 years now, I think.
Right.
Fantastic.
Right. I found you when I was giving a seminar one day, and one of my speakers dropped out, and so I knew this book had just come out. That was Bankroll 1, and my daughter and I remember us sitting in the back row of the screening room, and you were talking, and I said to her, "He's magnificent." I said, "Gosh, I would love to do a seminar with him," and she said, "Well, ask him, Mom," and that's...
That's how it went.
Yeah, that was the beginning of a great relationship. So,
for sure.
I really have had a good time reading your and working on the 6-CD audio course that goes with your book. I love the book, but the audio course is something I can back it up, replay, and I found it so beneficial to take on the road with me.
Oh,
so,
fantastic.
Yeah. So to raise money, I'm going to start with this. You say to pretend that you're giving someone a gift of $10,000, and you need to feel so confident that your film will return the investment that you think in your heart that you are really giving them a gift.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I was just talking to somebody today, actually, about the same kind of thing. And, you know, and in the CD course, I use the $10,000 as just as an example. You know, the key is shifting your mindset from asking for money to giving value, you know. And I always said that, you know, if you could have a time machine, an actual time machine, and I could go, you know, maybe 2 years in the future and find out that an investment was going to double its money, then I could come back and, you know, so I knew for sure it was going to happen. I would tell all of my friends, "Oh my God, you got to invest in this. This is incredible. You've got to double your money within 2 years." And so I would want to give that out as a gift to my friends and share that. Well, that's really what you have to get with your film investment, that you believe you're letting them in on something because they're your friends and you want them to invest so they can make money and they can prosper as well. Instead of saying, "I need this," and you're coming, then there you're coming from a place of need instead of coming from a place of giving value.
Very well said. And this is this confidence that you have inside you. People pick that up. If you show 1 ounce of fear, they're going to pick it up. So, and
fear,
the fear
or desperation.
With,
yeah.
You can't
yeah.
have that. So, okay, now, in this Bankroll 6 CD audio course, I know that you mentioned that you must start with a fully vetted script with really good coverage from professionals. Then you have to have a list of assets and some liabilities, but the assets must be greater. So let's start with, how do you define assets and liabilities?
Well, you know, when you're putting a film together, and most a lot of people that are trying to do it on their own, they have some type of liability already attached to it by, you know, they want to star in it, or they want to direct it, and they want to, you know, produce it or whatever. And I think that the reason I'm just calling it a liability is because they're not there. They may not be proven. This might be a first time direct, you know, directorial debut, or it might be the first film that they're producing. So that's a liability. So, you know, any of those things, you need to have them prepared and know what they are and be prepared to kind of defend them. And your outsets have to outweigh those. If you're going to star in it and, you know, you're the lead actor, well, then you need to make it a very, very cheap film. You know, so it's going to be super low budget. So then your asset is that it's low budget. The liability is that you're starring, but the asset's low budget. The director, you want to direct it? Okay, that's a liability. You've never directed before, maybe. But you have, you know, an A-list star attached. Well, that's a huge asset. You know what I mean? So then that outweighs the liability. So at the end of the day, you have to make sure that your assets outweigh your liability.
Right. And you should shine a light on the liability so they don't walk away thinking, well, I wonder if this guy can really direct and so forth. Bring those up so you can allay their fears and overcome it with your assets, right?
Without question, yeah. You know, you have to attack them and be upfront and transparent with those attacking, meaning the liabilities. It's like you don't want to say I was trying to close an investor for, you know, $1 million. It was my first film, and, you know, and I got that investor closed, and then I said, oh, by the way, I'm starring in it. You know, that's not good, you know. Or even if you're pitching the whole thing, and at the end you say, oh, by the way, I'm directing, and I've never directed before, that's not a good thing. You need to start with that. I always say start with your liabilities. You know, I'm pitching an investor, I'm saying, this is a movie that I'm starring in, and then so you start with that, and then you go and you tell all the value afterwards. But never hide them and throw them in at the last minute, or they're going to think you're trying to swindle them.
Exactly. And once you lose their faith and confidence, that's it. They're gone.
Done.
All right.
Yeah.
So also in bankroll, CD set, you say that you need an organic business plan, one that can change based on the way you want to pitch the project. So how do you advise filmmakers to get their business plan? Do you think they should make one or purchase one?
Well, you know, the key is they can make one. I mean, there's books that are out there that show. I mean, there's a business plan in my book in Bankroll, and there's business plans. There's books that I believe are dedicated to just business plans. So making one is okay as long as it's got the elements of the presentation and it gets the information clear across. I'm not opposed whatsoever to advising people to buy a business plan. You know, it's amazing to me how little money sometimes people want to spend to start their film career. You know, if they knew if they were going to be a doctor, they'd have to go through 12 years of school, and it's going to cost all these, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars to go to med school and this and that. But the filmmaker, you know, doesn't want to spend $500 on a business plan. And it's like, you know, to be in a career that, you know, blows the doors off of any salary any doctor would make if you're super successful in it. So it's like, you know, I would always advise going the professional route and trying to get something that you know is going to sell, because, you know, say you paid $1,000, say you paid $2,000 for your business plan versus paying nothing, but the $2,000 business plan closes the investor for $1 million. Well, what's better value at that point, you know?
Exactly right, right.
Yeah.
So, okay, you've got a vetted script, your organic business plan, your list of assets and liabilities, so now you're ready to pitch your high net worth investors, right?
Yeah, yes, exactly.
Okay, so what if you, let's say that, I see this a lot, where these young filmmakers raise money on crowdfunding, about $10,000, and so do you suggest that they use this money to get an attachment? Because a lot of times I find the first-time writer working with a first-time director, and they've done their homework, they have surrounded themselves with seasoned professionals from Hollywood. Now, what would you suggest they do with the money? Would you say go get an attachment to help bring more credibility, or how would you spend that?
Yeah, you know, an attachment is pretty, you know, to me, that's the best route to get a film made. You know, and I believe I say that in both the CDs and the book, that that's the most likely thing to get your film made if you have a huge attachment. I mean, a real, you know, solid A-list director, an A-list star. You know, but at the end of the day, what it is you're taking that $10,000 and you're adding an asset. You know, like, if you're starting a movie and, you know, for anybody listening and they say, oh, gee, all I have right now is liabilities. You know, I'm directing it, my friend's starring it, and this and that. Well, you need to start going to look for assets and start attaching assets. And so you can use that $10,000 to say, let me get a top-notch casting director and let me get them involved. and start to try to bring in an A-list star. Let me use this money to fly to Los Angeles and start to mingle with the right parties. Let me hire a publicist. Whatever it is to get to that asset. Now, when you talk about attachments, yeah, that's a huge asset that could very much help your film. And, so that's one they should go after without question.
Okay, you had attached a great director for The Attic early on, right?
Yeah, that was the first big step that we had taken with that film, yeah. The director of Pet Sematary, so she already had the horror following and all that, yeah.
So how did you get that attachment? Did you pay a casting agency?
Well, directors I've found, you don't have to be, casting is mostly for the actors. With directors I've found, many of them are looking for work. You know, you can go on IMDb Pro, find who their agents or managers are, and they're accepting scripts. I have always, knock on wood, had success with attaching directors, and many of them, through the DGA, you could find their direct contact information and go directly to them and get them to read your script. They're always looking for projects. Now, remember, going back and saying you're starting with a great script that has that coverage and you know this is a killer script, those are the ones that get the people. If you think your mediocre script is going to attach an A-list director, you think again, it'll never happen.
Right. Okay. Let's talk a minute about the 5% solution, which I call it, the 5% finder's fee, because I think that's one of the greatest assets that we have in the filmmaking industry. Have you used that successfully before?
Oh, yeah, many times. One of the things, to explain to somebody that may not have read it or not know what it is, it's reaching out to all your friends and saying, can you find me X amount of dollars? You know anybody that, might be willing to invest. And if you do this, I'll give you 5% of that money and I'll give you an associate producer credit or a co-producer credit or something like that. And I think that what makes it, it goes back to what I said earlier about giving value. You're not asking your friend, hey, I need a favor. You're saying, look, I'm giving you this amount of money. All you got to do is connect A and B. I'll do the closing. I'll get the money. You get paid, so how much value is that for your friend? You're $1 million, that's $50,000 for them to call up, their college roommate that's now, the VP of Dell Computers, I don't know, so that's a huge value for them.
It is, and I remember one time, one story you were telling us about a man that you pitched who was a wealthy guy, but you went to him talking about the 5%. And he said, wait a minute, what's wrong with me as an investor, right?
Yeah, I call that in the book the great side effect, is that a lot of times, you'll go in with somebody and say, hey, I'm looking for other people. Now, with that happened purely by accident. I didn't know this guy had enough money to invest. But I went in and I did the same pitch that I would do if he was an investor or not. And at the end, he went, wow, what about if I put the money in? So I call that a side effect. And you shouldn't expect that. But the bottom line is, if you have a great pitch and you have a great, script and all and a business plan, and you have to add this to the mix, and that person has liquid money, then you can do it. I might give the greatest pitch ever to, my actor friend that lives down the street, but he has $500 to it and he can't invest. You know what I mean? But so the side effect, you shouldn't expect it, but you always keep it in your mind that it could be there.
Yes, and besides which, this guy then starts pitching you, so the more excited and the more connected you are to him, with a sticky pitch, I always call it, something they can remember, then the better chances you have that he will find you someone, or she.
Yeah, he or she, yeah, especially if they put money in themselves, because then they feel that they have skin in the game, they kind of jump the pool, so to speak, and they would love some other people to join them.
Exactly, that's right. Well, the thing is that a lot of filmmakers get worried about this problem where you have only 38 professional requests that you can talk to people about. So when you are talking to people and you give them material, you clarify that by saying this is not, what is it, the terminology, this is not a professional request for.
It's I have it in my book as the confidential information overview, and it's really just, that legal speak for we're just talking here, And it's just saying, I'm just giving you information on it, check it out, and, you know, if we want to talk further, then we'll make it a professional request and all that. But it, initially, it's just saying, here's some information. What do you, you know, what do you want to do with it? Take a look, you know, and that's really all it is.
Okay, so then that's the safe way, and then they look at the material, and they come back and say, well, what's my return on investment? And that's where you, well, if you have, let's say you bought a business plan like Louise Levison, who does a tremendous amount of research, you would feel confident from the films she chose to say, well, here's what the professional did, and she seems to think that you would have this kind of a return. You would have some paperwork, right?
Yeah, you know, and that goes back to the paying for the business plan, and I, you know, I don't see any fault in that, you know, unless you're paying $30,000 for the business plan, you know. But I mean, as long as you're paying a respectable amount for it, I think that just goes to the point of, you know, if you have professional people that have shown that, then you're going to feel more confident pitching that, you know, and pitching an investor on here's the return. And I, like I say, in both the CD course and the book, that you have to show them how they're going to make their money back. You have to walk them through the waterfall, because that's one thing you're going to want to know. No matter what, they want to know, all right, if money comes back to you, how am I getting it?
Exactly. Well, could you just quickly go over the waterfall with us?
Yeah, for sure. And you know, and again, this is something I've said, that with every investor that I've ever closed, I have walked them through this, whether it be on a piece of paper, I've done it on a whiteboard, I've done it on a cocktail napkin. So I've done it so many different ways, but I've always walked them through it. It's just showing them, you know, okay, you're investing $1 million. Say the movie makes $2 million. Here's how it comes back to you, and you know. And there's the breakdown. I won't go into the specifics of it, but, you know, it's how the money breaks down, and you can go through, you know, my book, or there's other books that show that. But many people ask, well, how do you get that number of the, you know, you invest $1 million, it's going to make $2 million. And I say that number's not important. You know, you don't want to show them that they're going to make $30 million. It's just that you're showing them an example of here, if it makes this money, here's how it's coming back to you. You're showing them the process of, well, we got to pay the distributor this much, you got to pay this much, and then here's the split that goes to you, so that they know, okay, all right, if the money comes back, this is how it's coming to me.
And who gets paid first? That's what they want to know.
Exactly. They want to, exactly. And, you know, it's called the waterfall.
It's still the waterfall. But what I love, and I've advised other people, is when you're almost finished with the film, you're in post, times are tough, you're out of money, and you tell your next investor that the last money in will be the first money out. So you get that last $50,000, $100,000 you need to finish the film, and you put them on top of everyone else and pay them back right away, right?
Yeah, that happens a lot of times. People want, you know, the term that I use is called expensive money, you know, and they want first dollar out, and they want a better rate of return or something like that. So it's expensive money at that point, but that's when you're a little bit more desperate for it. You know, and a lot of times you got to go back to your original investors and clear it with them, you know. First, you ask them, do you want to invest a little more? And if they say no, well, then it's like, well, listen, I got to go after this other money, and it's going to be first dollar out. And then, you know, they understand. So.
Right. So usually it's the first money in and the last money in that's the hardest. So I've heard you give special gifts or special compensation to those who come in with the first money. So some of those gifts would be what, Tom?
Well, without question, because that is the single hardest, is the first money in, the first dollar in. And, you know, so you have to give maybe a little bit more added incentive. Like maybe if, you know, your movie's $1 million, if they put $50,000, you know, they'll get an executive producer credit, or they'll get the main executive producer credit for that little amount. Or they'll get a percentage of the back end plus a percentage of your shares or something like that, you know. Or, I mean, I've done it where it's, you know, they get the tax credit. So the piece of the tax credit goes to pay them off, so they're secured no matter what as soon as the film gets made, you know, or something like that. So it's just incentives to start that investment and get the first money in.
Right. Okay. That's brilliant. Okay. So the next thing is that I find filmmakers will make an ask too quick. They want to close in like step two instead of steps four or five. So it's getting to know the investor. So talk a minute about that.
Well, yeah, you know, the key is, is, yeah, everybody wants everything right away, and they want it easy. You know, they want to be able to. And that, and I, on a side note, I'd like to say that's why there's so many scam artists in the film industry, is because, you know, the filmmakers are so desperate, and they're not necessarily businessmen or businesswomen, so they go and they, you know, they're artists, you know what I mean? So they're like, they're trying to do this financial deal quickly, and that's why people can get scammed. But when I say get to know the investor, it's like, yeah, it's not just like, you know, asking somebody to marry you on the first date, you know what I mean? Because it really, in a way, is a marriage, and you got to form a relationship and make sure that that person trusts you and make sure that person understands what your goals are, and you understand what that person's goals are, and then you pop the question, you know, and then so you don't want to, again, it's, you don't want to ask them to marry you on the first date.
Right. Well, I've heard you talk about where you hang out with investors, you go spend time with them, you go to baseball games, movies, things like that, and then 12 o'clock at night they'll call you and say, come over, Tom, I want to talk, and you think, oh, my gosh. And that's
well, that question, you know. Yeah, and, you know, and that's what happens, you know, it's like you got to be in it for the long run, you know. But then, and then some of the investors have become my greatest friends, and you know, they could never give me one more penny, and one of them is considered one of my best friends in the whole world, and he doesn't have to give me one more penny for the rest of my life. It's just, you know, I've grown to kind of love him as a person. He's a great guy, and so you know, it's at the end of the day, it's not just like manipulating them in any way. It's going, look, I'm in a partnership with this person, eventually a business partnership. Do you want to be, I mean, think of it from your end. Do you want to be in a business partnership with somebody you have no idea who they are? I mean, that's come back to bite me, you know, and when you, they invest in your movie, and then suddenly a month later they freak out. Where's my money? I want my money. It's like, well, we didn't even make the movie yet, you know? So, and that comes from a lack of knowledge and trust and friendship with the investor.
Exactly. Okay, great. Well, once you have outlined clearly what the different types of high net worth individuals are, we've covered the guy who wants to know, this is an investment, how am I getting my money back with the waterfall.
Yep.
But you also talk about someone who has a vested interest. So give us a little bit of that.
Oh, yeah. The vested interest approach, I think, is, you know, has the potential to be the strongest, especially in this economy, because there was, and especially in the film industry, the way it is with people not buying DVDs anymore, and, you know, and again, the economy, all that stuff after the banking crisis of September 08, there's just not the money there that used to be. So if you're pitching on a strict investment, there's a lot of things you have to do to make sure that you secure getting the money back for the person or making them money. But if you have a vested interest approach, the key is, the definition of that is, they're investing in you for something other than purely a financial return. Meaning, if you're making a movie about a World War II, you know, event, and this investor is a World War II veteran, you know, or a Vietnam veteran or something like that, they want to do it because they want their story out there. You know, I always bring the example of the fact that my Love and Dancing, that something like 70% of the investors were dancers, you know, because they loved the dance in the movie's West Coast Swing, and they loved that dance, and they wanted to bring that to the world. So for them, it was less of just, you know, obviously they were still somewhat interested in making money and all that stuff, but for them it was like, I want to be associated with a movie, you know? I mean, so many people have invested in movies just because they want to walk red carpets, and they want to be known as a producer. So for them, it's not about financial. It's about, you know, vested interest. So the key there is finding what makes them happy and selling them on that.
Exactly. And maybe they have a brother or sister that wants to get in the movies, and you can write them apart or put them in there.
Yeah, without question. You know, one of the co-stars of Love and Dancing was one of the other producer's wives. And, you know, he and I put the film together, and I don't believe I could have done it without him, but the way he committed is because his wife was getting one of the lead roles. Then he committed, you know, and then really, you know, helped out and raised money and all that stuff. But, so yeah, I mean, those things happen a lot. You know, a guy almost funded a film for me, and then I forget what happened. I think she got cast in the lead in a TV show, but because his daughter was a professional actress and he wanted a showcase for her. So that was his vested interest.
Great. Well, that's another way to go. So you have to analyze who these people are and which way to approach them, right?
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Exactly.
So in bankroll.
Sorry to cut you off. I just want to add to that real quick. Something a master salesman told me. If you're pitching, you know, 1 + 2, it's like you and I and everybody knows 1 + 1 = 2 is the key. That's the truth. But if that person believes it's 3, you can pitch 2 all day long and you're not going to get the sale. You've got to pitch 3, you know, and that may not be the and I'm not saying that you're lying. I'm saying that they're interested in something else. They believe something else. But you have to make sure you're pitching them on what they're looking for.
Exactly. So this comes with getting to know who that person is, what they have achieved in their life, and where their interests are, right?
Yes, exactly, exactly.
Okay, well, I really like the idea that you remind us to read books on selling and to remember that a good salesman will call 12, or call like 100 people and make 20 sales, but a poor salesman will call 100 and make 10, right?
Yes, that's a huge point, and a master salesman told me that. And, you know, there's kind of a multiple thing here, but just to address that first, is that, yeah, that's the story, is that a good salesman make 100 calls, sell 20 of whatever. A bad salesman make 100 calls and sell 10. So there's really not that much difference, and the bad salesman is still getting calls, still getting sales. Then there's the third, which is the lazy salesman who won't make any calls or make 10 calls. You know what I mean? And so it doesn't matter if that person's good or bad, they're not going to get the sale. So the key is putting the effort in just doing it. But again, back to the reading books on sales or attending sales seminars, invaluable, invaluable to raising money. And here's me that's raised, you know, over $20 million for films. I'm still doing it. I'm still reading books on sales, new books, new techniques. I just read a fantastic book of negotiations called Start With No. I highly recommend it. You know what I mean? And so that was a negotiation technique book, and I've already used those principles. So you should always be, no matter if you think you're the best or not, you should always be trying to educate yourself more, learning new techniques, and adding to your kind of quote-unquote repertoire.
Great. My favorite Tom Malloy quote is, go until no.
Yeah. And that's true. You know, that's go ahead. I'm sorry.
I could just see you continuing to talk to someone until they finally say, no, Tom, don't call me anymore.
Yeah. And you know, knock on wood, that has never happened. I have never had somebody say, don't call me anymore, because I'm not annoying, you know, and you know, maybe at the most I might call them once every week or so, or 2 weeks or something. But, you know, I've had people say, I'm not interested in this investment at this time, or, you know, I'm out of money, blah, blah, blah. So I've had all those things happen. But the key is, you know, never give up, never lose that person from your contacts or your Rolodex until, you know, one day they say, leave me alone, I'm never investing with you. And if they say that, you're probably doing something wrong.
Okay.
Well, Tom, we have about a minute left. I want to make sure everyone knows how to reach you. Could you tell us your contact information?
Sure. The best way is through bankrollthebook.com. You know, you can go there and you can email me directly. The emails do get to me. And so on that site, that you can order the book, the second edition, and you can order the CD set if you want a hard copy, or there's now an online version of the CD course that's $29.99, I believe. And you can just go on there and listen to the CDs and have them on there online all the time.
So bankrollthebook.com.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Great. Carol, we have a few seconds left if you want to ask one more question.
Well, Tom, you say that we live in an abundant universe. Money is everywhere.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yes, you just need to know how to find it, and it is out there, and believe in yourself, believe in your project, and believe that you can close the money. One of my favorite quotes is, people who succeed believe that they will, and you just need to always remember that.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Tom.
Thank you. Wonderful.
Thank you for having me on the show.
All right.
Thank you very much. Fantastic.
Take good care and great success with everything else you do now.
Thank you. Okay. Thanks. Take care.
I want to remind our listeners that David Raiklin is a brilliant and talented award-winning musician who scores films and can compose music for a trio or for a full orchestra. David is a very good friend to the independent filmmaker and comes highly recommended by From the Heart Productions. If you need music to help tell your story, please contact him at davidraiklin.com. That's David, RAIKLEN.com. And Carol and I want to thank you for tuning in to The Art of Film Funding. Please visit our website at FromTheHeartProductions.com. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter. Good luck with your films, everyone.